this week on A Lively Experiment. New life for a prominent building that's been vacant for nearly a decade. And the field grows for the state's number two elected position.
A Lively Experiment is generously underwritten by...
Hi, I'm John Hazen-White Jr. For over 30 years, A Lively Experiment has provided insight and analysis of the political issues that face Rhode Islanders. I'm a proud supporter of this great program and Rhode Island PBS.
Joining us on the panel, Phil Bartholomew, founder and host of the Bartholomew Town podcast, Brown political science professor Wendy Schiller, and attorney and legal analyst Lou Polner. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Lively. I'm Jim Hummel. It is great to be back with you again this week. Governor McKee on Tuesday announced details of a plan for the so-called Superman building that he had been hinting at for months, a $220 million redevelopment of the former bank building into apartments with a $40 million commitment of state and local funding to make it work. Developers say there is an element of affordable housing included, but how that will look is open to debate. That's one of many questions, Bill. I think, this is the opening, but there were a lot of questions that they just couldn't answer.
Well, that's it. And it's still, I think it's in some ways, there are questions that we won't know until the building is renovated and the market dictates who's going to live there. 285 apartments, 20% of which are affordable. Now, is that capital A affordable or lowercase a affordable? Some people are suggesting it's going to be about a $50,000 income threshold to qualify for those 20% of affordable housing. But to many people in the state and many critics, both on the progressive side and on the conservative side, affordable housing is, you're talking about people who are making less than $25,000 a year. So there's a lot of confusion about who this will serve. Also, the apartments that are, being at market rate, who's going to live there? Are these people commuting to Boston? Are these people that say, let me try Providence and get out of the suburbs and move into downtown? So big questions to be answered.
A marriage of the progressives and the conservatives. You don't see that often.
Well, it's the insider versus outsider game in Rhode Island politics that, when there's an issue that seems to be dominated by people who are on the inside in terms of the direction of a decision or a policy is going, you occasionally see that alliance of a Sam Bell and somebody from the Libertarian Party or something like that.
I think about this issue of affordable housing, and I think about it in terms of access to good school systems. And one of the things I think about for families that could live in the Superman building or any other new development, and I think to them, what are we doing as government policy that's the best thing for that family? And Providence schools continue to struggle, although they are trying to get better, and there are a lot of ways in which they're trying to get better. But, would it be better to use public money or tax dollars, for example, to make sure people could afford housing for a family in areas where schools were really good? In other words, why the push to put families downtown where it may not be the best life situation for families that are not making a lot of money but also have children that need to go to good schools? So I think it's too separated a policy. There's too much going into this. Do we need to develop downtown? We do. It's been developing a lot. There's a lot of new building, a lot of new housing going in everywhere, and it's becoming a more realistic destination place for people to
live.
But
I think it's flipped, Wendy. You're saying about families downtown. The affordable housing element's almost an afterthought that they were forced into.
Yes, just yes.
It was a quota because that's what's going to make it work. They're not, it's like, we have to do affordable housing, right?
Yeah, I mean, they were just putting a bow. They're putting lipstick on a pig, according to Gordon Fox. This building was purchased by High Rock for $33 million. It's now worth around $14 million. $10 million to renovate it.
Right.
40, 25 from the state, 15 from Providence. Providence is borrowing almost all of the 15 that they're going to put in. So tell me, what could go wrong here?
Yeah, the thing I wonder, too, though, is...
Everything could go wrong, was my point.
So, look, the demand is horrible right now, but we know, we've been around long enough to know that the real estate market goes in cycles. When this is done 3 years from now, what's the market going to look like?
I'm not Nostradamus.
Well, because, I mean, there's also, we have, you know, with eds and meds, right? We have really solid educational institutions that are in and around Providence. Obviously, URI has come downtown, RIC, Providence College, RISD, Brown, Johnson & Wales. There's lots of places where people are going to want to live. And so there's a big, huge student complex going in not that far away. And there are people who have very big houses on the east side, for example, or in North Providence or Providence that maybe want to live downtown. You never know. I don't think there's not a market for this. I think there's always going to be a market for this. It's not that big a building. We can talk about the Fane building, on the other hand, in terms of the price point. That's the one thing I want to know about this new Superman building. The Fane building's priced at a really high level. Is the Superman building expecting those kinds of rents? Because I think that's unrealistic.
Well, there's a very serious shortage of inventory in downtown Providence right now if you want to live there. They're actually, it's very difficult to find an apartment if that's an area you'd like to live in. And I think if the state was being completely honest about the state, the city, the developer, were being completely honest about this process here, they're trying to attract a certain type of person to downtown Providence, somebody that might work at the CIC Wexford building, get lunch at Plant City. Oh, good, let's go to Trader Joe's on the way home. Then let's go out to the various bars. They want this new Providence that is, yeah, the 20% affordable housing. That's a bow, exactly. But they're trying to target new residents, new people to come to the city, and essentially leave Boston or New York or anywhere else and create this new dynamic going into the next several
decades. Let's not forget about the mass transit. They have changed and are changing the bus routes so that you can hop on a bus really close to that area and go straight to the train station to get the train, making commuting much easier. So, you know, over time, I do think there's a lot of potential. You're right. I mean, how much is the public money going in and when are we going to see a return on that? But, you know, you got to start somewhere, and that building, you either have to destroy it or renovate it. You can't keep it there forever, I think. The other thing
I haven't heard about is cost overruns. You know there's going to be an overrun.
Absolutely.
Who pays for that?
Yeah, well, that's...
Like the Worcester Stadium. Looks beautiful, but, you know, push comes to shove. You get 75% into the project. You can't say, oh, you know, we're not going to meet budget, so we're going to stop.
They're probably going to have to contribute in proportion to their investments at this point in time. So, again, pro rata, it would be High Rock, it would be the city and the state would be contributing to the overruns.
Just final point on this politically. It makes sense. They got the governor, the speaker, and the House president are on board. They've got the whole Providence delegation. So despite the opposition, it looks like they've got their eggs in a basket on day one politically to get this passed, right, for the funding.
Except for who wasn't there, the senator from that area, Tierra Mack, the council person from that area, John Gonzalez.
So, and the council has to sign off on it, right?
And it is at the behest of the council in many ways. So there are still barriers for this to take place. But I think you're right. They sold it well. I mean, how about Stephon Pryor? I mean, the guy is like the hype man of the century on this thing.
Yeah,
I think it's going to go through.
I love Mayor Alorza said he was talking about not only driving in on 195 South. I don't know how that works. The Superman building is a building that we all have a connection to. We all feel attached to it. In no small way, it's a symbol of the entire state. I didn't see it on the license plates, Lou.
No, he waxes on like that, and it sounds good for half a minute, and then it just, what? What did he say?
But switching up Tierra Mack and John Gonzalez, they're two, I think, up and coming, influential, you know, relatively recently, she's been reelected, but relatively recently elected people who I think are positioning themselves. So they're going to have to figure out where do they want to be and who do they want to align with and who are they going to represent and how do they get themselves both representing the progressive wing and people whose voices haven't been heard before and being part of the establishment here. So I think their holdout on this will be, in my opinion, for both of them, fairly strategic.
Yeah. Wendy, let me stay with you. Violence, the spike in, you know, so then you're talking about all these nice developments and then the reality of being in Providence, to a lesser extent Newport, which we'll talk about in a bit. And as we go into the summer months, look, COVID is gradually ending. People are out, and this concern about is Providence a safe place to go?
I just think if anybody who wakes up in the morning and looks at whatever your newsfeed is, there are shootings every single day in every single venue. Birthday parties, you know, after you go to a baseball game in Washington, D.C., you know, everywhere you live, there are too many guns that are too easily available. Legal, illegal, too many guns, too many people have them. You know, you could say 30 years ago, 25 years ago, people would have a fight. But now they pull out a gun. And these are students now pulling out a gun. You know, there's in Indiana, for example, they're all, you know, a school, high school shooting, you get mad, you pull out a gun. In Virginia, two in the morning, a young reporter was killed, and bystander innocently. So, you know, this is the problem. It is a problem. It makes us, quote unquote, less safe. So we have to figure out how to combine legal gun ownership in a safe way and figure out a way to keep guns out of the hands of people, A, illegally, B, ghost guns, to make sure if you have to get a license to drive a car, you ought to have a license to operate a gun and own a gun. And now we're moving, a lot of states are moving to no concealed carry permits at all. So you don't need a permit to get a gun. So I think this is, a massive problem, but it's not unique to Providence. So I don't know how bad it will be for Providence.
I'm just grateful that we have a serious prosecutor in our attorney general. Mm. It's no liberal progressive like we see in Chicago and we see in New York City. Nirona is a conservative, and he's a serious prosecutor. I mean, you get charged, you're going away.
I mean, Providence, I live in Providence, and I don't feel unsafe in Providence. I live in South Providence in Elmwood. You know, I come back at 2 o'clock in the morning sometimes from a gig and unloading gear. You know, a lot of that is just...
You think these are isolated?
Yeah, it's isolated.
It's gang. It's a lot of gang-related. Mm.
Sometimes it's, when we look at crime as a whole, I think that addressing it here in Providence, for example, I think the community policing model is a smart one. I think Chief Clements is on the forefront of managing a police force in that regard.
He's good.
And his goal to elevate the Providence police roster, the number of active police officers, makes sense if those officers are doing community policing and they're forming those relationships.
It's just not resources, but strategically deploying them.
Absolutely.
And they got substations, which is great policy.
And recruiting and training people from the community to be part of law enforcement, it's been a big issue. And I think you just saw an interview with the outgoing state police, and he also said the same thing. We're understaffed, but when we are trying to recruit, we're trying to recruit a more diverse force. And I think that's really important. And I think we've seen a commitment from leaders in Rhode Island to do that. But I mean, I know it seems isolated, but I think it's a general sense in the population as a whole in America that we are much less safe, even though numerically violence is way, way lower than it was 20 years ago. We still feel unsafe. And I think that's a significant political problem going
forward. Well, we could do a whole reflection on that. I mean, that could be media and your instant feed and everything's right there.
I mean, just what happened on the subway in Brooklyn a couple of days ago. Yeah. I mean, that doesn't feed into great confidence when you're doing public transportation.
Exactly. All right, let's shift gears and get into politics a little bit. For an office that has been maligned over the years and our late friend Bob Healey wanted to eliminate, the lieutenant governor's race is attracting a lot of attention. We now have three candidates on the Democratic side and two on the Republican side.
That's right, and it's going to be very interesting. In the Democratic primary, yesterday we had Sabina Matos announce that her intention to stay as lieutenant governor, remain as lieutenant governor, and had Senate President Ruggiero on stage with her, a number of other political leaders as well, obviously the governor. Deb Ruggiero has the support of Speaker Shikarchi. So that creates a very interesting split.
And most of her chamber,
and
obviously.
Most of her chamber.
Yeah.
So it creates an interesting dynamic where you have institutional support split between two candidates. That could create a pathway of sorts for Senator Cynthia Mendez, East Providence, Pawtucket, the progressive who is, you know, in tandem with Matt Brown. Now, I don't think that Senator Mendez is going to get statewide momentum, but just in conversation last night with some politicos that I was hanging out with, you know, we were wondering, how does Rhode Island, and it will be a little bit of a litmus test, react to the notion of seeing a ballot, having really no idea who these people are, and seeing two Latina names versus an Italian or a more Americanized name? Will that give Deb Ruggiero an advantage at the ballot box in the Democratic primary just based on an ignorant vote that is simply based on looking at names and going, I'm guessing that the Latina women are more progressive or something like that? So I think it comes down to uninformed voters that are going to decide this race.
Can you imagine if Cynthia Mendez got elected and having to work with Dan McKee? the locks of the state house.
Yeah, right now, I think it's refreshing seeing our governor and our lieutenant governor working in lockstep. I think it's refreshing. And he's embraced her, which I think is just...
If not constitutional.
Yeah. But he's embraced her, unlike the way he was not embraced by his predecessor. Mm. And it's refreshing. And I have no problem if they want to run together. I don't.
Yeah, I think the perception, this is chronic at the national level and in Rhode Island, the Latino voting bloc, and Bill is much more familiar with the inside baseball here than I am, is not monolithic. In other words, it's not everybody's the same. We know this. We know that from Tavares of Dominican, right, Laura's a Guatemalan, just to throw that out there. Puerto Rican community supported Buddy Cianci in the old days. So there are real divisions within the Latino community in terms of business interests, small business ownership, progressive politics. So I think it's going to be a really interesting. There's lots of Latinx candidates running in general. Right? Dios is running. A lot of people are running. So to me, I don't see the ignorance there. I think that the Latino community will be incredibly mobilized. I think they're going to be courted by Matos and Mendez in different ways. And, you know, they're going to have different bases of support. And I just think it's going to be fascinating. I actually think that it's going to be a very tough year for progressives across the board. I think there's just a lot of sense of insecurity, a lot of sense of tumult. And we've seen in American elections at state level and national level, when that happens, people go to what they are familiar with, as you're suggesting. Yep. But Matos has done a very good job at McKee's, enabled her to do that,
absolutely,
which is to look like a leader, sound like a leader. She already was a leader. She's a tough politician. She's won, she's lost, she's come back and won again. And I think she's gearing up for a career here. I don't think this is not just lieutenant governor. She's building a base and a political machine, eventually, I think, to run for governor.
She sounded incredibly well prepared for a long career in politics yesterday. She had the energy, the visualization. The rollout yesterday was something that you would see from an A-block type political leader, and I think she could very well be a governor in her lifetime.
Yeah, well, to the professor's point, we see what's happening with the progressives in Washington, D.C., and we see our country going to hell in a handbasket. I don't think that bodes well for the progressives here in Rhode Island, and I do think that it's going to be a heck of a year for progressives losing their sachet.
The only caveat to that is if the Republican Party nationally goes too far off the ranch. I'm not sure progressives will do that well, but I think some Democrats will survive in circumstances where they should lose to the Republican. But if the national party becomes Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert,
that's
problematic for the Republicans.
That would be disastrous.
Yeah.
And we haven't heard much. I mean, Matt Brown and Cynthia Mendez said the Rhode Island political co-op, and they're going to have 50 candidates. And then we really haven't heard much since then. Matt Brown is like, you haven't heard anything.
Nothing.
That's short of the camp out that they did.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, when was that? December.
Right.
Crickets.
You know, it's interesting because just speaking off record with a lot of progressive leaders in the state or activist leaders in the state, Matt Brown isn't particularly well-liked. He doesn't really embody the spirit of what that movement is all about necessarily. But they also could say, well, we got Dr. Munoz, but he's got no shot. You know, man, we don't want to see Helena Bonanno Folks or something like that. So they're getting behind Matt Brown. But yeah, Matt Brown's been conspicuously quiet. And I wonder if you look at his run in 2018 and how it came up so short, and the difference between his performance and Aaron Regenberg's performance. Regenberg got 49% of the vote. He almost was governor right now. Matt Brown got crushed. And that shows that it really does come down to personality. It's not just simply, all right, who's the progressive? It's people in that world are looking for a leader. And I'm not sure that they believe Matt Brown is that person.
And I have two questions. Why has Munoz not gotten? We did a conversation with Munoz from the Taubman Center at Brown, and he's really got a lot of ideas. He's really well-versed in things. I mean, I've just been surprised how he hasn't been able to.
It's
I know, but with social media, I would think, I mean, he's got an operation, he's got people working for him. So I'm surprised he hasn't taken off, an attractive candidate in every way. But also Nelly Gorbea, who I think has done a very good job as Secretary of State and is a smooth politician and has raised good money. She's not as much in the conversation as I think she needs to be, because you just mentioned Folks, you just mentioned McKee, right, and Matt Brown, for example, but not Nelly Gorbea. And why not?
And I'll tell you why not, because Governor McKee has all the money. And by that, I'm saying it's like, for example.
But he also has the microphone.
Yeah, but he's also buying the votes. I mean, we know it's 3,000 for thee, but not 3,000 for me. It was like being in Oprah Winfrey's audience. You know, 3,000, you get 3,000. You get 3,000.
Yeah.
And everybody gets 3,000. And again, the second payment on that 3,000 is just before the primary in the summer.
Oh, the bonus.
And look, he's walked that back. That was, I think, a clumsily
rolled out. He walked it back.
No, but he's still giving the money.
That's money that would have likely been built into negotiating
I don't buy this at all. The packaging is definitely clumsy and gives
a perception that you now have this 3K McKee type of
mentality.
It's not
clumsy. It's totally on purpose. And I don't believe that it would have been built in any way. Maybe. I mean, I just think, you know, he's had serious missteps, I think, between staff involvement and private deals, and
he's been getting bad advice.
And well, we've talked about this. His team are experienced politicians, but maybe that's not the right thing for this day and age. And he walked it back, sort of. But the people are still getting the money, and his name is still all over that. So I don't know.
And the second payment's still right before the primary.
Yeah, right before the primary. Nellie's been raising money, though. She has been raising money, keeping up. Not quite the same, you know. And the folks' candidacy, I've said, she has a lot of money. I don't know if people are ready for a Gina. Which is she's styling herself out. And she has no public experience at all. And in this day and age, with these kinds of problems, I'm just not sure how well that's going to resonate with a total lack of experience. I think McKee has righted the ship for now, and he looks steady, and things look steady. And if we have a good summer, I just think that's going to be a difficult thing to surmount when you have no public sector experience.
It's always a challenge, Lou, because the primary, you know, who's paying attention in August and July, and they're rolling these ads out. You know, so do you get traction now, or do you save your money for the end? There's 4.5 months left until the primary, and then it's the sprint to the election. So, I mean, I know everybody goes through this, but you're right. I have not seen it. We see the governor every day. The other candidates, it has been crickets.
Well, it's, you know, tough economic times, and not the contributions aren't necessarily flowing, notwithstanding what you said, as much as they would like it to be. And the reality is I'm sure that they're waiting until just before the primaries, and then, as you say, the sprint to the election.
But folks, go on.
Well, folks rolled out 1.3 million in quarter one.
But where's she spending it?
Exactly. Well, where she's spending it right now is in phone surveys, polling. They're still gearing up. She claims now, if you Google Governor Dan McKee, if you do a Google search, anything related to Governor Rhode Island, you will see Helena Bonanno Folks ads pop up. So they're spending on Google ads. They're trying to move things behind the scenes for sure. When does that big rollout happen? That's the big question. And it will be too late if they wait until June, because everyone will be at the beach.
If you have the money, then go ahead and spend it.
Yeah, but how many Rhode Islanders? We're a small state. And people like to think that they know their politicians. I mean, this I've learned.
Nobody knows.
Living here for 25 years.
Nobody knows Bonanno Folks.
Right. And so how many people in Rhode Island are doing Google searches of McKee? Nobody, because everybody knows who he is, and we're a small state. So I'm not sure that's the best advertising
sure.
that she can spend her money on.
I think
local television for her right now would be good. Here, I'm going to introduce myself to you. Gina was treasurer for 4 years. It's a big difference in rolling out that campaign.
And the pension case, though, really made her.
Yeah, a lot of visibility.
Yeah.
Yep.
Before we go to outrageous and kudos, we're taping Friday morning. On Thursday, Senator Jessica de la Cruz said, I'm pulling the plug. And, you know, we saw this with Ed Pacheco. There's only so many dollars out there. And I think she saw the Alan Fung train coming. What, are you surprised at all or not?
I'm not surprised at all, because I think maybe someone from the Fung camp got to her and had a conversation. She only was able to raise like $80,000+ compared with like $500,000 by Fung. It was a bit of a clumsy rollout of her campaign. I know she had some support and she had some traction, but it was also a little bit amateur in some ways.
The guy with the binary hat.
The non-binary hat. I mean, come on. What are you doing here? So there's a lot of reasons to think that she wasn't ready for prime time. At the same time, she says, well, you know, my constituents in Burrillville want me to represent them in the State House. And maybe that's true as well, even though that's not the reason she dropped out.
Yeah, but that's like the guy who's been in the Senate for 60 years and he's on the verge of indictment, and he says, I'm retiring because I want to spend more time with my family.
Yeah, right.
The family's like, I'm not sure we want to spend more time with you. So I appreciate that, but she saw it was the money that drove the issue.
No question about it. And I think, you know, you've got Bob Lancia, who is, you know, he thinks that he almost won in 2020
ran before, right.
because of the fact that he thought he was up because they hadn't started counting mail ballots yet. You know what I mean? So you've got that going on. So that's almost a little bit of a sideshow for Fung to have to deal with. So it's almost like you bring the De La Cruz people into the Fung camp and just try to squash anything Lancey has got.
Just quickly, you raised the question we were emailing back and forth. Does Biden hurt the candidate in CD2 on the Democratic side?
Yeah, I mean, I think I do. Right now, Biden looks like a big drag on the congressional races. And for Fung, I think it's more for Fung. You know, we saw this in 2018 with Fung and the Trump hat at the convention for Trump, and that hurt him. And I think that he's well known. He's got name recognition. I think he's generally well respected and well thought of in this state.
He did a good job in Cranston.
Can he separate from Marjorie Taylor Greene? Because they're going to run ads. You know, the Democrats are going to run ads in Rhode Island, the National Democrats, and say, if you vote for him, you get him and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert and Trump and everybody else.
Yeah.
And is that going to be just enough, particularly if the Supreme Court gets rid of abortion and we've got codified Roe v. Wade? Are they going to ask Alan Fung, would you vote to overturn that? What would you do about that issue in Rhode Island? That's a tough question for him. I think he can navigate this, but I think it gets complicated if he gets the nomination and goes through the fall.
Yeah. Let's do this. We're going to do some of this. We're going to do a lively extra on some national and international stuff. Let's do this because I don't want to short you, Lou. Let's do outrageous and or kudos.
My outrage has got to be I want to hate on NATO. You know, we're doing everything that they say we can do without instigating World War III to assist Ukraine. But, you know, and this is 2022. I don't understand why we can't do more. I don't understand why we can't close the airspace. I mean, I know we're doing a lot of things behind the scenes, like that ship that went down yesterday from Russia. I mean, we're doing a lot more than we're letting on. But I'm hating on NATO because we shouldn't be watching this genocide, these atrocities. And that's outrageous.
All right, we'll get more to that in the lively. Bill, what do you have?
Well, last night, my friend Amanda Pitts was covering an event or a meeting, an emergency meeting at West Warwick an elementary school in West Warwick. There evidently was a situation with a pre-K teacher and a student. It's unclear what it was, but they were basically, the West Warwick School Department put forth some kind of spokesperson to kick them off the property. It's
public
property.
Meeting.
It's a public meeting. The public has a right to be informed. Now, you can make some arguments that there are situations where media needs to be pushed back, or you can make arguments that a media truck may be in the way or something like that. But to kick reporters out of public spaces those are the scenes of fascism, and we need to be very careful about it. It's outrageous what happened in West Warwick last night.
Touche.
That is crazy. Wendy, what do you have?
We're spending too much money in government. That's my outrage. And it's directed at ARPA money in Rhode Island. It's also directed at the $6.5 trillion budget that President Biden put forth. $6.5 trillion budget. I just want to stress that this is extraordinarily high for a federal budget, and it pushes all state budgets higher because we get all this money from the federal government. And don't think for a minute, I mean, it's probably disproportionate for Rhode Island in terms of taxes, what we pay to Washington, but this is tax dollars. It's our tax dollars. It's your neighbors everywhere else in the country's tax dollars. And we act as if it's like a candy store, and, oh, what do we spend the money on? Well, maybe we shouldn't spend the money. Maybe we should save it, or maybe we can't. We have to spend it by 2024. Maybe we should give it back if we can't think of something good to do with it. It's taxpayer money. And when we get so dependent on huge influxes of federal dollars, those are federal tax dollars.
That's
so
a conservative viewpoint,
it is,
and I really like
viewpoint.
It.
He's coming over to your
I
side.
Like
yeah,
it.
So
it's great.
I think I believe in government services, and I believe in taking care of people who cannot take care of themselves and providing decent housing, decent schooling, and decent health care. But we are spending way more money than that.
No question.
And I think sometimes it's got to stop.
All right, folks, we got a lot more to get to. That's all for our on-air portion, but we're going to do a special online bonus segment, Lively Extra. So right now, go to ripbs.org/lively. We've got some national and international stuff to continue. Maybe Wendy will continue to spout her conservative ways a little bit more. Lou and Wendy and Bill, thank you so much. Folks, join us online, and if not, come back here next week as the Lively experiment continues.
A Lively Experiment is generously underwritten by...
Hi, I'm John Hazen White, Jr. For over 30 years, A Lively Experiment has provided insight and analysis of the political issues that face Rhode Islanders. I'm a proud supporter of this great program and Rhode Island PBS.